The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by Me Audio. So here's the deal. If you've ever seen me in a live stream or in an interview or some other kind of video, you've probably seen me wearing some fancy earbuds. For the last couple years, my work buds have been almost exclusively from Me Audio. Excellent drivers, fantastic accessories, and both my wife and I had our ears scanned by the folks at Me Audio for custom molded ear tips. Super comfy. The MX line of Pro in-ear monitors is one of the easiest lineups to understand, starting at $60 and built around actual professional use. Detailed sound and durable construction, but also with some fun options like customizable faceplates. Even if you're not working on stage or in studio, Pro solutions like these are fantastic audio options, and they don't need to break the bank. And the company also supports a lineup of consumer gear with options for true wireless and noise-canceling Bluetooth earbuds, adapters for TVs to stream your audio to nicer headphones, and headsets for kids to help control the volume on fresh, developing ears. I can't stress that last one enough. We have to start kids out with healthier listening habits. It's a great combo, high-quality audio gear built by a team of folks with recording-grade use in mind, but at consumer-friendly prices. But of course, I can do you one better. If you shop the kit at meaudio.com and use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, you can save an additional 10% over their already competitive prices. Once again, meaudio.com, M-E-E-audio.com. Shop some fun kit, promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, 10% off. Keep your ears and your wallet happy at the same time. I want to thank the folks at Me Audio for hooking up the promo code. Now, let's get on with the show. All right. I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show. On the SGGQA podcast channel, forgetting my spiel. In the chat, we're talking right now about how, you know, the seasons are changing. It's getting warmer outside. We're all, you know, those of us who are nerdy indoor folk, dealing with different allergies and antihistamines. And I just got done, you know, typing in the live chat. I'm on some pretty killer allergy meds right now. And I'm forgetting the spiel, the opening to my own podcast. So welcome to the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show. I'm Juan Carlos Bagnell, a.k.a. Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this terribly named podcast series. And of course, the QA stands for Question and Answers. We like to make this an interactive conversation. We like to share our thoughts on all of the top news stories that are kind of hitting the web. But then I also like to hold my podcast on a Monday so we get kind of the week and the weekend to sort out our feelings on some of these stories and then come back fresh. We're not just falling for the headlines. We're actually digging into these stories and following up on them where we can. Whew. And apparently I'm going to be kind of loopy today. So it's great. My last little swig of coffee here. Just getting us all started for the day. I hope everyone had a lovely weekend. There are some decently sized life changes that are going to be coming down the pipe for me and my family. We're probably going to be moving soon, so we're trying to figure out the logistics on that. We moved here to get Lex into a school district that we really liked, and then, you know, when the pandemic hit, we never really fully kind of moved into this space. Like, I had bigger plans for Gadget Lab. We thought we were going to be in this unit a little bit longer than we ended up being in, just a little over a year. And I wanted to kind of open the space up, kind of change how I shot my videos. But then when lockdown happened, we basically put all that on hold, not knowing how long that was going to go. And of course, a part of this was also to open up this space so that I could do more things like interviews and collaborations, get Josh over here, get TK over here, get Trish over here. Obviously, none of that could happen. But as we're starting to figure out what this new normal is going to look like, as we're kind of making some of these transitions, we're going to be in line for a new Gadget Lab. So let me see, Gadget Lab 1, yeah, that was in that neighborhood to, this is technically Gadget Lab 3. So we're going to be moving on to Gadget Lab 4.0 in an office roughly the same size. So I really want to kind of figure out sort of a new look, a new feel. I'm going to be keeping things like the bookshelves, but I want to move to a smaller table. I want to have a standing desk for my main workstation, some changes like that, but then to kind of simplify, you know, maybe it's time to get rid of bookshelves and lights as my main backdrop. And I just want to go to a simpler like desk so I can like shoot B-roll of like a gadget over a simple desk style setup. A lot of things to kind of work out. But over the next couple of weeks, you're probably going to be seeing some changes. The podcast is going to be maybe the one constant that I can, even if I need to, I can go to an empty room with a microphone and plug into some kind of internet connection and still stream. But just the rest of the trappings of the videos and the content that I'm making are going to be changing up. And I kind of feel it's the time to start addressing some of the complaints that I've had, me personally, not complaints that have been sent to me, but the complaints that I've had with how YouTube is working and how our channel commentary works. I'm going to be looking to shake up. You know, I want to do more with devices, less talking about devices. So there are a lot of things that we're going to be trying to tackle during this life transition. But we've got an incredible, hopefully the new place will have fiber. Oh, the new place is so close to fiber, it hurts my soul. The new place is actually pretty close to a high school. And obviously that means, you know, we would have good data, but we are just on the other side of a hill. And so I'm going to be back on cable and it kills me because it's like I can see fiber from my house. I just can't have the fiber in my home. It's just killing me. But I do actually hope you will get better 4G and 5G coverage. Because we're closer to some larger facilities like a high school, our wireless is going to improve tremendously. I went over there to start doing, we've got to do floors. We're going to do replacing some light fixtures. Like there's a lot of little repair stuff that we're trying to tackle. And I went over with my Surface Duo to get some writing done while we were waiting for a repair guy to come and give us an estimate. And I had my SIM card in there. I didn't even think about it. You know, like here I get such miserable LTE connection. I thought like, I'll be able to write, but maybe I won't be able to do too much else. I made it over to the new place and I fired it up. I was like, oh, I have reasonable LTE coverage. I can actually use this here. So I was really happy about that. From Dave Burns, maybe get the home office T-Mobile 5G infrastructure. I'm going to have to play with some other things and maybe I'll need to do a Kickstarter to fund a let's shame the local ISPs. Because apparently if you spend $10,000 on an ad to make fun of AT&T, they'll try and roll fiber just to your home like they did in North Hollywood. And again, it's like this community is so close. Again, it's blocks away, so we'll have to see. Oh, and if I could get 100 megabit bidirectional, that would be awesome. Oh, you know what? Fat Produce, that's actually not a terrible idea. I should just get Starlink. And maybe I'll reach out to reviews.org and be like, hey, if we're going to talk about satellite, I'm going to need to have satellite that I can test and I can demo. So maybe we can make that play. It's a business expense. Hey, Loki Ted is in the chat. Loki Ted, you're probably going to like what we have to say in the second half of this podcast as we get to the gadget blog. So I hope everyone had a lovely weekend. Hope you got some time to, you know, at least speak with family and friends, if not in person. Like maybe you're starting to get your shots and you can kind of get back to some kind of flow of in-person communication, but at least, you know, over some video calling or some phone calling or something like that. We caught up with a lot of family over the weekend and that felt nice. It was really nice. I mean, mostly over video calls, because again, my family's really crazy and spread out. We did have a calamity with the waffle maker. Yesterday I went to make some waffles, and apparently the last time, a couple weeks ago, we like to make waffles every couple of weeks, and a couple weeks ago, you always end up making more batter than you can really eat in one sitting, right? So we'd made up some waffles, and apparently when I put away the waffle maker, there was still a waffle inside the waffle maker, and it was just sort of sitting in there for around 3 weeks. So we go to plug the, my wife goes to plug the waffle maker in again to kind of get it warming up, and apparently she didn't check it to see, because why would you? And so we started getting this like rancid smell coming out of the kitchen, and we go running in there, and a deteriorating waffle was just liquefying inside of our cheap waffle maker. So we had to get rid of that, and we were able to pivot very aggressively, air out the kitchen. We got a fan, kind of blow out all the sort of rancid smoke, and then we were able to kind of convert what our starter waffle batter was and get it into pancakes. So that was the fun and exciting adventure that we had this weekend. Yes, Dave Burns, pancakes. We did not do waffles yesterday. So we've got a lot of news to tackle, and that intro took a little bit longer than I was kind of planning on. But folks, again, I'm really stoked to see y'all. I think this is going to be a fun conversation. I'm a little loopy. I'll be easily divertible on you know, going off on tangents, but I digress, you know, that kind of stuff. So sorry, I'm just seeing some folks talk about how the LG Wing is ancient. Ooh, Fat Produce is throwing down the gauntlet and saying flapjacks are better than pancakes. Is there a functional or practical difference between flapjacks and pancakes? Or is this just you saying that saying the word flapjacks is greater than pancakes? All right, so let's jump in. Get some housekeeping knocked out. This should be pretty straightforward. I'm not gonna go through the whole deep dive. Obviously, there are some other things, like I got a video out for reviews.org. You can catch that, talking about router settings to help kind of manage your data cap if you have a home data cap. And then also TK and I streaming every Thursday, and there a video version of my coffee podcast with Brenton on the Journey for Java podcast. It was a really lovely conversation. Apparently they had some issues with Restream's audio, so I felt kind of bad for them, because I know how that feels when, you know, you put together this interview and you record like an hour of conversation, and then you stop recording and you listen back and you're like, oh, those settings were wrong. And unfortunately there wasn't much I could do to kind of help them, but they still got a video version of our conversation out. So you can catch that too, if you ever wanted to hear me sort of showcase how little I know about coffee. It was a really lovely conversation, especially following LG's departure from the smartphone industry. I really needed that. But on the actual channel, somegadgetguide.com, if you were watching last week's podcast, we did that deep dive. We really did the analysis. It's like 40 minutes of conversation about the OnePlus 9 optical image stabilization and comparing it against a similarly priced phone. And I'm still getting kind of bristly about the OnePlus 9, because I feel like this is yet another example of how we're rigging the conversation to make sure that more popular phones win. And every single time I kind of finish a script or I'm ready to review a product, like I'm wrapping up a longer term look at the OnePlus 9 Pro. It's the phone that's had my SIM card in it. I've got a couple other devices that are coming in for me to review, but like this has been a daily driver kind of conversation. And it's frustrating because the SEO on OnePlus videos has already tanked. So any video that I put out now is going to get terrible traffic. And I'm going to have to deal with the onslaught of Redditor techies that are just convinced this phone can't win. It's not worth it for the monies. It's too expensive. OnePlus has betrayed us by trying to sell more mainstream, even though their sales have never been better. Their popularity has actually never been higher. It's just techies feel like OnePlus kicked their puppy or something. It's so funny, the emotional reaction that techie echo chamber folks have over a brand like that. So it's like every review I put out has to have this major component of media literacy attached to it. Like, I'm not saying nice things about OnePlus just to curry favor. I'm showing you this is how I got this work done. this is how I've tested these products, and this is why I'm coming to the positive conclusion that I am. And it doesn't really matter because, you know, the explanation I put out is still not going to be, it's still not going to be listened to. If one of my videos somehow makes it on our Android, it's just going to be, oh, he thinks he's so much better than everyone else. And to a point, they're right, because I am. Like, I show my work. I'm not just, like, reading off the spec sheet and going, oh, it doesn't have OIS. You can't buy a OnePlus 9. It's garbage. So this was, like, a major part of last week's podcast. Whoops. It would help if I clicked on the right link. There we go. This was a major part of last week's podcast, was spending 40 minutes talking about cameras and analyzing content and looking back and forth between two comparably priced phones. And it's hilarious that with the OnePlus 9, the handful of videos that I've put out on the 9 and in the 9 Pro, it's funny watching the ire pivot. So a bunch of techies come out and say, like, I'm not going to buy a OnePlus 9 because it doesn't have OIS. Who could fathom putting out a phone camera in current year that doesn't have OIS? Even the Nord and the Nord N10 have OIS. And you're like, okay, well, that's dumb, but show your work. If it's so clear that there's a problem with the phone, that should be easy to demonstrate. And so no one really has, because there's nothing to really demonstrate. The few examples I've seen are like moving subject in dim lighting, pixel peeping to like 600%. But you can't demonstrate the comparable performance with that kind of a subject. You know, if you're trying to shoot ducks in a pond, you can't take the exact same shot from a Galaxy S21 at the exact same time with the exact same framing under the exact same lighting conditions. So it's very easy to cherry pick a couple really bad shots and then go, see, no OIS, this camera's garbage. When that's not what OIS is for. OIS doesn't freeze the action of your subject. So I put out a video comparing a Galaxy S21 against a OnePlus 9, where basically almost everyone got the pics wrong. One person got them right, who Christine Roy. I got to shout her out because I forgot to shout her out in the analysis last week. One person got them all right. Christine Roy nailed the ballot. That's one person. You know, like, you're telling me that there's this tangible difference. So I put out all this commentary, and it's hilarious that the feedback that these videos have gotten, you can almost see when a switch is flipped. If people from the OnePlus subreddit or if people from our Android find one of my videos, there's this immediate turn in the comments. And then I have to sit there and weed out people that are just garbage at commenting or don't really want to join the conversation, but they just want to talk about my tone. So they clutch their pearls. Oh, his tone is so confrontational. Well, yeah, it sucks. But, like, correcting bad information is exhausting. And so, yeah, I get a little combative. It's funny. So now the tone isn't, well, I mean, the camera's garbage, obviously. It's now, it's the principle of the thing. It's the principle of adding OIS to this phone camera, which makes no sense. If this phone camera can handily compete with other devices in the sub $800 bracket, does it matter? Does it matter if it has OIS? Well, if, you know, OnePlus knows that OIS is valuable because they put it on the Pro. Yeah, more expensive phones get more expensive features. But we're not comparing a OnePlus 9 at its price tier to the launch price of a OnePlus 8 Pro. The comparison is OnePlus 9 versus OnePlus 8, and especially OnePlus 9 versus OnePlus 7, where more folks are probably coming from a OnePlus 6 and a OnePlus 7 than they are a OnePlus 8. So if we're comparing appropriately, going from a OnePlus 8 to a OnePlus 9 is a noticeable and tangible upgrade. Why? Because they put in a significantly more expensive pair of camera sensors. They just saved a little money on the spec sheet by not putting in a slightly more expensive camera mount. the actual practical differences are noticeable and immediate. So yeah, I'm getting less and less impressed with this, like, well, I'm an expert because I go to websites and I memorize all the specs. Like that, you don't even know how much you don't know about the gadgets you're talking about. Two turbo. I see those tone comments and it's like, bruh. I mean, a part of it is, it's like, I just don't want those people in my comments. So I try to make them as unwelcome as I can. Moving right along. This is hilarious. Like, housekeeping is going to take me forever if I keep going off on these tangents. To further illustrate, like, I saw another video. No. I read an article where they were talking about different camera features. And they were comparing two different phones and then mentioning, well, they both have the same aperture. So the light, I forget exactly how they phrase it. They both have the same aperture, so the ability to gather light is basically the same. And that's fundamentally not true. And this is another example of why I'm so frustrated with techies, is it's very easy to memorize a bunch of letters and numbers. But understanding the practical differences between those requires just one extra little step. You know, if you're going to talk about cameras, you're going to review phones, and let's face it, phone reviews now focus so much on camera performance, which is hilarious. If you're going to call yourself a techie, allow me to gatekeep here for just a second. If you're going to call yourself a techie, you should understand some of the basics of photography, rather than just, well, I pushed the shutter button a couple times and I like the juicy colors better on the phone that's more popular, which is a shock to no one. So I felt like it was time to kind of illustrate this. And again, showing my work and doing the basicest of math. You know, so this video will require you to pay attention to a little math. But I put out a video, Camera Aperture Explained, Take Better Photos from Your Phone. And just because two phones have the same aperture ratio of f1.8, it does not mean that they have the same physical hole that lets light onto the camera sensor. The only way you could believe that is if you also believed that f1.8 on a proper interchangeable lens camera is the same sized hole as f1.8 on an iPhone, an iPhone 8? Is that when they went to an F1.8? I can't remember. Because I don't memorize specs. I already have enough problems keeping important information in my brain. It's really easy to conceptualize that. Take like a big old monster DSLR lens at F1.8 and physically look through the hole of that lens. And something tells me the whole of that lens is going to be way bigger than the entire camera assembly on a phone. So it just cannot be practically true that two devices with the same aperture have literally the same hole and the same ability to gather light. So I made a video about it. My explanation here, way less charming and way less fun than the video I actually put together. And I'll save the actual explanation in the math for that video. You can watch that instead, because I'm getting all sloppy here. Man Illusion, as a beginner to photography, I feel like I'm actually learning a lot listening to your explanations, and that makes me really happy. I feel like this is such a beautiful and fun technical art, and it doesn't take much for someone to really step up the quality of their content. All it takes is caring. If you care about the photos you capture, the videos you shoot, you will naturally seek out better information to improve your capabilities. And I feel like the techie conversation has given up. The techie conversation has boiled this down to the most knuckle-dragging, lowest common denominator as to what consumers might try to do with their cameras. And I'm watching this incredible content get made. So instead, I'd rather appeal to the better. I'd rather appeal to the people that are trying, that are looking to improve and to do anything else with any camera that they get their hands on. Sorry, there was another one here that I wanted to. There was another comment here. Do, 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 do. Dave Burns, check out his book. Hashtag plug. This podcast brought to you by me and the fact that I wrote a book on smartphone photography. I'm planning an update to take better photos. My book, which is currently available on Amazon Kindle. I am planning an update, but I think what it's going to be is just a couple little touches. A lot of what I updated last year is still kind of holding true in terms of like sensor design, HDR processing. But I think I'm going to add just a few more of these little technical. I've got some technical write-ups, you know, why higher resolution is better even on a lower res display, pixel binning sensors versus traditional RGB Beyer sensors. And I think I'm going to add one about like aperture and shutter speed. As it pertains to smartphone photography and smartphone video. But I think another part of this is just going to be making a few more of these supplemental videos, you know, linking the video in the book. And then also, I mean, you can catch parts of this on your own. So I'm going to try and do some stuff that's a bit more fun. I want to have more fun. And speaking of having more fun, the last bit of housekeeping as we get to 9:24 in the AM. Ultrazone Performance 880 headphones, sweet and mellow. Ultrazone is a German audio manufacturer that has been a blind spot in my testing. I am very familiar with brands like Sennheiser and Audio-Technica and Sony and professional monitors and really nice headphones that serve a practical purpose. And I'm starting to kind of play with a few more, you know, premium or audiophile style listening experiences. And so I got my hands on these Performance 880s. They're a little older. I want to say there was a big push video-wise like 5 or 6 years ago. But this is an established German audio manufacturer. They've been around for a while. I finally took some time to listen to them, and I jammed on them for a while. And it was really fun, like, as I was writing up the script, instead of trying to focus on all of the technical bits and then doing the same kind of B-roll. And here's like a close-up on the casing, and let me show you the headband, and let me talk about all of the frequency response graphs. Instead, I'm trying to focus a bit more on just what did I listen to while I was reviewing these and how did it sound? And that was better for my soul. So I'm gonna try and make these a bit more of the listening party whenever I get a new pair of headphones. Instead of focusing so much on the technical bits, I'm going to start abbreviating that more and more. Just like I expect that you can go look up the phone specs on GSM Arena, I'm going to back off. You know, this is a triple driver design with these types of drivers, and then this is the frequency curve that if you listen to this, then you should expect it. I just don't care. Like, if I'm listening to music and all of a sudden I find that like there's a trend, the Performance 880 created a trend. I started listening to some hard rock that wasn't really catching me. And then all of a sudden, like a couple hours later, I realized I'd gone down this deep dive of like classic R&B and Motown. And you're like, oh, there's something here. There's something interesting happening, and my brain clicked, and it took me in a specific direction, and I enjoyed that. It was a really late night, especially my first main like listen. And then after that, like I kind of got a vibe for him. And I feel like it's just better. I feel like that's better commentary than what I was doing for my last couple of headphone reviews. So I'm gonna stick with that instead. Root Night, you're not wrong. Housekeeping will be its own podcast soon. Are we at a half hour? Sure. Cue the Rebecca. I'm hoping for a DXO Mark type of score. The Performance 880s, they're sevens. On what scale, I don't know. You know, I rate them a 7 out of a scale of 3 to 9.5. That's how we play. What price bracket? Oh no, ultrasounds are pricey. These are premium cans. What are they retailing? $4.99, depending on where you shop them. So for me, it's there is a different conversation at play when we're looking at, you know, $4.99 for a pair of cabled, simple, over ear closed back cans versus something like, Bluetooth audio. If you take care of your cabled cans, they should last you decades. I'm now running into some of my older neck bands, like the batteries are starting to go. They don't hold a charge as well as they used to. They're starting to burn out. So did I really get $200 worth of use out of them? And if I compare that to $200 on some kind of cabled solution, I'd say no. There are different types of convenience. And I would say one type of convenience is not being tethered to a player, to a phone, to a computer. And another type of convenience is not needing to replace them for decades. I have some Sennheiser DJ style, the HD25s, that I've replaced parts on them. I've replaced ear pads. I replaced the cable on one of them. That was kind of a pain. But I'm going to go 20 years on those easy, and they'll probably still outlast. Again, it's going to come down to whether or not I can find parts, or if I need to like solder some new connectors or something, and I'll be good. And I seriously doubt I have any Bluetooth that's going to last like that in my lineup. Oh, and Gary the Fireman gifting out some tier one subs to McCorkerin 3, Awesome Possum, DSO Thorn. Gary, thank you so much. If you'll allow me one last little personal anecdote before we wrap up housekeeping. In our current place, we're in Southern California, and there really isn't an end to fire season anymore. Temperatures have been getting warmer, climate has been changing on us, and especially as we've lived in Southern California, the extremes have become more apparent. And so last week, we had an incident where down the block and easily captured from my OnePlus 9 Pro, the hillside went up by the freeway. It shut down the 101 right by our place, and the entire hillside on the freeway side just went up. I mean, it's just scorched black earth at this point. And it was incredible being so close to that action where we saw firefighters on the ground. We saw helicopters up in the sky dropping water on the blaze. Like I said, I managed to snap a quick photo with the telephoto lens on the OnePlus 9 Pro. You can catch that on my Twitter if you want to see it. But just seeing, people actively fighting that. It's so much less. You think about, there was this brush fire and a bunch of people went out and fought it. And you're like, okay, cool. Seeing it actually in action, the mobilizing of that workforce, the number of trucks that had to be moved to the scene, shutting down a major freeway in Southern California, and seeing like how that entire operation functioned to put out that fire in a matter of hours is absolutely incredible. It's just completely awe-inspiring. So my plea, especially as the weather is starting to heat up, more people are starting to venture outdoors again. We're probably going to be running into more situations, especially if you live in a slightly drier climate. If you know a firefighter, if you meet a firefighter, give them a nod, give them a fist bump, buy them a beer. And if you can, if you have the means to, please find opportunities to support them. They're regularly here in California, out there like holding out boots for donations just to kind of help fulfill, funding and budget. And I don't really feel like firefighters should have to do that. I feel like my tax dollars should go to making sure that they are well trained, well funded, well cared for, have healthy pensions, have great health care. I mean, I don't feel like they should be out there asking for change. So, if you have the opportunity or the means, buy them some food, buy them a beer, support them in whatever kind of local cause or initiative, vote to give them better assets, better pensions, better equipment, better training. I kind of feel like they're super worth it. So I might be biased, but that's my plug. All right, let's get into some news.
Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on r/glowingrectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
Okay, all of the links from housekeeping over the last half hour, all of the news stories that we're going to be talking about, you can find everything on this week's show notes, somegadgetguy.com. All right, get this here. I wanted to start this off with just kind of a cursory examination of a quick examination. When a company is really, really big, they can leverage their size to undercut competitors and to kind of force a trend in a market which we might not appreciate. Now, often on this podcast, you'll hear me kind of use Samsung as an example. They're the world's largest, but then they also occupy, you know, pricing and strategies that are very reminiscent of like Walmart pushing out competitors. You know, they can set the price for whatever a current gen, you know, flagship chipset product can cost, but then they can charge a lot less for it and then offer ridiculous trade-ins and rebates. And somehow that latches on to the conversation. You know, it's not, this is what the product really costs. It's, this is what the product is subsidized for. And then competitors can't really fight that. Or you get these ridiculous comparisons of full price for this phone and sale price for Samsung. Well, one market that I feel is kind of getting hammered right now is the VR headset market, where if you want to put out a VR headset and you just want to have a relationship with a customer, put out a good product and charge appropriately for how much that product costs, Facebook is working very aggressively to disrupt that relationship. So if you have been looking, you know, the price on an Oculus Quest 2 just looks too good to be true. That's kind of because it is. Facebook is treating Oculus as like one part data aggregator and one part console. So there's a part of me like, you know, they expect that if they sell the headset at cost or even at a loss, they're going to make up money in the long run based on acquiring more data and software sales, licensing software for the platform. So if you wanted to, if you were considering buying an Oculus Quest 2 and you wanted to try and get one without all of the Facebook strings attached, it's going to cost you quite a bit more. So this is coming by way of PC Gamer, written up by Alan Dexter. Oculus will sell you a Quest 2 headset that does not need Facebook for an extra $500. From the article, the Oculus Quest 2 is a hell of a lot of hardware for $299. In fact, we're convinced that Facebook is making a loss on each unit sold. Even so, that pricing is one of the main reasons it's the most popular headset on Steam, and our pick is the best VR headset. Well, that and its ease of use. Going down, if you were to try and pick up an Oculus Quest 2 without all of the Facebook business attached and you weren't really looking at using it, like if you were using it as more of a dev tool instead of a gaming platform, the price is going to jump $500 more. And there's an annual fee of $180 that kicks in a year after you buy it. The true cost of an Oculus Quest 2 is significantly higher than what Facebook is currently selling them for. Now, I don't believe it is $500 just because of your data. So this is, they're calling it Quest 2 for business. So let's say you ran an organization and you wanted to create VR walking tours, you wanted to develop apps for VR. You don't need the full Oculus Quest 2. So you can cut out a lot of that consumer-facing software. You're not going to be buying it to play games on it. This is a work tool. Facebook can't make up that money on software licensing. But the thing that really galls me is the fact that it's $500 more and a $180 a year charge on top of that. So my estimation of this is that first year, let's cut $180 of consumer behavior data monitoring. And then, so that's roughly $320 that they're assuming they're not going to make, the profit they're not going to make on software licensing. But your consumer data might be good for Facebook to the tune of $200 a year. Or at least like consumer data and software license. Let's say you bought one game a year, which I know that's a hilarious, poor debate tactic of a comparison. That's insane. That is so insane. And again, Facebook apparently has pockets deep enough to disrupt. You know, no one's talking about HTC Vives. There's a very niche community that's talking about Valve indexes. I have an old Acer, one of the very first generation Acer mixed reality headsets. No one's really considering, MR for VR headsets. You know, the main option, the thing that's really sucking all the air out of the conversation is the Oculus Quest 2, because it's such a good bargain. It's so cheap. And if anything happens to your Facebook account, if you want to step away from Facebook, if you want to just like deactivate your account, you can't, because it's all tied in together. And now it's a part of that Facebook ecosystem. So it encourages a subsidized business model, which I wish we could get away from. I know it's very elitist of me to say, like, I wish you could just buy the headset for what the headset costs and then buy games for it. But that seems to be a bridge too far in the next iteration of what our gadget and console economy are going to look like. But it's giving me even just a little bit more anxiousness. Like, we got some reports that maybe the next PlayStation VR headset is going to be starting to kind of tease out a little bit more. Probably won't arrive this year, but maybe next year. And I'm thinking, like, my next play for VR might be a PlayStation. I mean, again, I want to support a business model that I feel does business with consumers more appropriately, is upfront about the costs that go into selling that product, and doesn't require nearly as many back-end shenanigans. Like, I do not want to have a Facebook account to use my VR headset. The two have nothing to do with each other in my current consumption. So if you're a business and you want to develop and you want to work on an Oculus Quest 2, $800 and $180 a year. That's all it's going to cost. Pittance. Get an Index. Get an Index instead. Don't get a Quest 2. Or excuse me, don't get a Quest 2 for business. Whatever that means. And Fat Produce is saying the newest HP VR headset is really good. And he's apologizing because he didn't mean to post that twice. But it was, if it's good enough, then you can post it twice. From 2 Turbo, $180 a year. Double bruh. Yeah, I missed the boat. So I went with my Acer because it was cheap. And it's cheap. I really do need to give Windows Mixed Reality another try. All right, here's another one that I just want us to keep an eye on this. These types of media maneuvers are always really interesting to me. Recently, T-Mobile said that they were going to be killing T-Vision and going with some sort of relationship to like lower costs for YouTube TV. They're going to go with Google services. The carriers recently pulled out all of their investment in rolling their own RCS apps, and now they're going to just kind of go with Google Messages and Google's flavor of RCS. Again, carriers always seem to get in the way, make the market worse, and then wash their hands of it when it doesn't work. From smartphone payment services to messaging services to online media streaming and services. And I'm hoping that this is a trend where ISPs and carriers are looking at the vertical integration and are worried that, you know, investing all this money into owning media might not be such a great idea if they can't lock consumers in sort of anti-net neutrality policy. I don't have any data on that, but that's just my general gut feeling that we're seeing T-Mobile walk away from T-Vision, and more recently, Verizon is selling off its media business for $5 billion after splurging on AOL and Yahoo. This is the article from Engadget, written up by Aaron Is Social, because I don't know how to pronounce Aaron's last name. That's Aaron's Twitter handle. And the parenthetical on this is the deal includes Engadget. So Engadget is owned by the media entity that was bought by Verizon, and they're going to be up for sale too. So Verizon has agreed, I think they mean it, Verizon has agreed to a detail. I think I know what they mean here. Verizon has agreed a deal to sell its Verizon Media unit, including Engadget, to the investment firm Apollo Global Management for $5 billion. Verizon will retain a 10% stake in the company, which will be named Yahoo. Verizon Media was the result of several acquisitions the telecom giant made in an attempt to become a major player in the online advertising market. In 2015, the company bought AOL, which owned Engadget, alongside other news sites like HuffPost, TechCrunch, and Autoblog. The $4.4 billion and then... they bought this for $4.4 billion and then added Yahoo to the fold in 2017 in another $4.48 billion deal. And they killed the name Oath. They wrapped it all up together, and then they changed the name Oath to Verizon Media, and now they're going to be selling Verizon Media to a management firm. So I don't have the highest hopes for a $5 billion deal, including all of these media entities. Recently, we've seen layoffs at some of these media entities, the business model encouraging more like freelancer and work for exposure kinds of deals, and now Engadget is kind of wrapped up in that larger media consolidation and conversation. Again, it's just very concerning when Verizon has put between the news sites, Yahoo, making Oath, and then sort of rebranding Oath, easily over $10 billion. And they're going to be selling it to a management firm for about half what they've put into it over the last 4 years. Is that what we're looking at? Somewhere around 2017? So, Simon says Hypno. Some Engadget guy, DTNL hashtag end some gadget guy. And from Kapakosh, why do they buy these businesses with no intent on the long haul? I feel like that is a huge conversation that we should be having at this current phase of the internet. Because I feel like you've got a bunch of executives that are trying to make the big deals, and they're talking the big game, and they're making these acquisitions, and they're throwing this capital around. And I feel our assessment of success or failure is still very short term. Like, we have no long term view on a market. It's what did they do last fiscal quarter? What did they do this fiscal quarter? And then they get really twitchy and reactionary to minor stock price changes over very brief windows of time. And when you go through and you're a carrier, you're an ISP and a carrier. Verizon operates as in different markets as both a wireless carrier and a home broadband provider. You started making these plans for media acquisition years ago. And so when we follow that thread, you know, over the early days of net neutrality, Verizon was extremely aggressive in suing the United States government, in suing state governments. We're going to be talking about that in just a little bit too, because they wanted to have kind of a walled garden. They wanted to have a sort of a one-stop insular. Consumer signs up for our service, they get these media properties, they're going to stay on our network, and we can subsidize those costs. We can then sort of ensure that they're going to stay in our walled garden because we have all this great content for them. So we can offer them a perk. You know, hey, if you're really going through Yahoo News, that won't count against your data caps. We can give you this great media experience, and it's not going to raise your bill. But if you go and you stream a bunch of video on a competitor's platform, well, then it's going to eat up your data. So we went through that. We eventually got net neutrality. That was struck under the Trump administration. And now rumblings of it are coming back, especially at the state level. So right now it's the right play to shed additional costs because you anticipated a net neutrality style market where the internet was only an information service, not a telecommunications service. That's kind of the feeling I'm getting from this. When I see Verizon making a play like this, when I see T-Mobile making the recent announcement that they made, I think this is the short-term reaction to what they feel the long-term ramifications of net neutrality will be. Even AT&T, oh no, we can't do our sponsored data anymore because of the laws in California. And you're like, yeah, but you built this program on the short-term window of striking down net neutrality, even though the long-term market would tell you this is a bad business plan. Sponsored data has been fought time and time and time again because it's really not good for businesses and it's kind of not good for consumers. So this is a tricky market to understand, but I feel like you get a kind of like a short-term change, agit pie at the FCC. Now let's make this play. And you get a bunch of executives that jump on and a bunch of yes men going, hey, this is a great idea. And then it falls through when another administration comes in and starts recovering the rules that we had before. So it's messy. Sorry, that was sorry, Kapakosh, that was a really long-winded explanation. Short story long. I feel like this stuff isn't as predictable as we think it is, like hindsight being 2020, but I feel like a longer-term strategy based on your offerings would do better. It's hard to quantify that and then get other people excited if it doesn't have an immediate effect on the stock price. Like, let's say you've got this great 20-year strategy for Verizon. If the next fiscal quarter doesn't play out and show gains, then your 20-year plan is scrapped and they're going to go with another short-term win for the stock price. I'm going to take a sip of water here. Aditya is not wrong. I'm in amazing, but I digress shape right now. All right. Another one that we need to keep our eye on. I'm going to sum this one up quick because this is just the beginning of the examination of this. But we've talked before about antitrust, anti-competitive business practices, the kind of situation that Apple finds itself in while we're going through the Apple versus Epic App Store fight here in the courts in the United States. And Apple is apparently going to be fighting this war on another front in the EU. EU says Apple's App Store breaks competition rules after Spotify complaint. This was written up by Sylvia Amaro and Katrina Bishop for CNBC. Apple has abused its dominant position in the distribution of music streaming apps through its App Store, the European Commission said on Friday. Quote, our preliminary finding is that Apple exercises considerable market power in the distribution of music streaming apps to owners of Apple devices. On that market, Apple has a monopoly. This is an interesting finding. So this is going to be challenged in the courts. There's going to be further debate. There's going to be extra market analysis. We want to keep our eyes on this one. Apple is trying to create a vertical. The hardware that consumers own, the interfaces and software that they use as portals to the web. And now Apple is finding significant growth in services, Apple TV, Apple Music, Apple Health Services, Apple Health Monitoring, being able to verify and certify home automation products for Apple consumers. So one of the arguments that Apple has always sort of enjoyed is they are not a monopoly because you can always leave. They're not a monopoly because they don't even sell the most phones in many regions. They're not a monopoly because you could get a Windows machine instead of a MacBook. You can get an Android phone instead of an iPhone. But I feel like the court's current estimation of Apple business practices is starting to lean towards the idea that there is no competition for Apple products and services for someone who is invested in the Apple ecosystem. So it does resemble a monopolistic business practice if on your hardware you can also offer a competing service like music streaming. And I feel like they're now starting to look at Apple in the same way that they used to look at Microsoft during the web browser wars. Oh no, Microsoft includes Internet Explorer on their operating system. That is anti-competitive. Apple, including Apple Music and Apple TV and all of the Apple services, while they also control the App Store where consumers might find competing services, and anyone who's on the App Store has to give Apple a 30% cut. I feel like they've been in a similar position as Microsoft for a long time, but there's still this idea. There's still this notion of Apple being this plucky little upstart. You know, like they're the world's most profitable tech company. This course correction, this market correction is long overdue. So this is one we really need to keep an eye on, because I feel like whatever comes from this will probably also influence the legal examination of Apple in other markets. I don't know if this is going to have an impact on Apple versus Epic, but this is a visible PR win for Spotify so far. From Kapakosh, basically Apple wants to be the one to collect your data. You have to go through them only. Well, because it also, you know, their data collection policies also improve their own products. So they have a vested interest in also knowing your behavior too. Just another quick court case. This one was written up by Business Insider, but I've exhausted my paywall on Business Insider. So I've got the link here from geeks.lk. Google is facing a $4 billion Supreme Court case over claims it secretly tracked iPhone users' internet activity. This is going down in the UK. Excuse me. So this is similar to the FTC case that went up in 2012. This is what they reference in the article. Google was previously forced to pay a fine of $22.5 million in the U.S. to the Federal Trade Commission for similar behavior in 2012. But apparently in the U.K., they're going after them for £3 billion. So this is another one to keep an eye on, that Google's ability to track user behavior through browsers and through Siri as the main search on the Google, the main search on the iPhone for the voice assistant, is now being very closely examined by UK regulators. So again, this is going to have an influence on how data collection policies are reworked. This is probably going to have a corollary in the EU. And then when it gets to the United States, we'll slap Google on the wrist and we'll tell them, you know, $10 and you've got to buy us all lunch. And that's, Google's really going to learn their lesson. Tech potato plus one for saying sterling. I used to have a hard time as an American because I don't say it right. You know, it's £3 billion. It doesn't sound right. You know, I don't have the accent to denote that it's currency and not weight. You know? So I've got to add the sterling. Just so in my own brain, when I hear back my own speech, it sounds correct. £3 billion. Oh, yes. Okay, that works better. And that sounds a little more, it's like $3 billion. $3 billion in cash. Cash money, £3 billion. I can pull off quid. For some reason, it doesn't sound right when I say pounds. So yeah, Simon says hypno. I imagine £3 billion coins would weigh a lot. So I'm going to wrap up the news block, and we're almost going to make it here to the hour. One last write up here. Q3 Becker. Great, Scott. That's heavy, yo. Sorry, I got to take a sip of water. That cracked me up. We mentioned Verizon, right? When it comes to government policy and net neutrality, Verizon has been one of the key architects of fighting the open internet order, net neutrality, and has been boots on the ground in all of the states that have tried to enact net neutrality since the Trump administration gutted it. last week, or maybe the week before, we talked about a new plan that's going up, a new bill that was just recently signed in New York, where subsidizing internet costs and broadband costs, they're going to force carriers to offer a $15 broadband plan for people that qualify for income assistance. So there are these different acts, and there are these different different plans that you can sign up for if you need assistance. And we recently, the FCC just approved a lot of money to help further subsidize low-income broadband. So in New York, they're also trying to make sure that someone who qualifies for this is going to be paying a nominal fee, $15 a month for the definition of broadband, 25 megabits down, 3 megabits up. Well, carriers and ISPs don't like that. So they jumped in, and as soon as the bill was signed, they sued. New York requires $15 broadband for poor people, promptly gets sued by ISPs, written up by John Brodkin over at Ars Technica. Internet service providers today sued New York to block a state law that requires ISPs to sell $15 per month broadband plans to low-income households. The lawsuit was filed by lobby groups, including U.S. Telecom and CTIA, the Wireless Association, both of which count Verizon and AT&T among their members. Lobby groups for many other ISPs also joined the lawsuit, with plaintiffs including NTCA, the Rural Broadband Association, the Satellite Broadcasting and Communications Association, and the New York State Telecommunications Association. The biggest cable lobbying group, the NCTA, did not join the lawsuit, but a cable lobby group representing small providers, America's Communications Association, is one of the plaintiffs suing New York. So, a number of lobbying groups are now throwing money around to try and halt this. And at the same time, it's always been difficult imaging and messaging. You know, broadband companies report record-breaking profits, but they're also instituting things like data caps and policies that aren't really necessary, but further improve the profitability of their networks. And at the same time, we've got this huge divide. You know, there are kids trying to do their homework in the parking lots of fast food restaurants because they just need to hook up to some Wi-Fi. So we've got a major reckoning that needs to happen here. And especially as, you know, the classification of the internet should probably change back to it being a telecommunication service. We're seeing that those investments in media and content distribution probably aren't paying off like they were hoping they would. And also, just how much does it really cost a company to offer a service like this? So if they're going to keep relying on public funds, years back, we talked about how these same lobbying groups made a huge stink about the amount of public funds that were necessary to improve broadband distribution and broadband speeds. But they wanted to keep all the profits, but they didn't want any regulatory oversight. And then we did. During the Trump administration, we gave them billions more to improve rural broadband, and very little of that really made it to consumers who needed to be hooked up to the internet, you know, culminating in a global pandemic where many of us relied on the internet to get anything done. So this is a long-term market correction that's in desperate need. We're seeing senators reach out to groups, other bureaus and agencies in our government to try and raise the definition of broadband. 25 down and 3 up is not really very competitive in the modern era, but that's the minimum that needs to be delivered if you're going to call your service broadband. And I feel like that's worth $15 a month. 25 down, 3 up. There's no reason why you shouldn't be able to cable up people, hook people up, and offer that as a bare minimum service for $15 a month. So this is the very beginnings of a brutal fight. Net neutrality through the open internet order was a decade-long fight between carriers, ISPs, and the federal government. We're only just starting to see the scraps happen here. Between service providers and different states. But I feel like if this is the tactic, if we're going to spend this much money fighting these cases in court, I feel at the same time we need to start examining the viability of municipal broadband. Verizon and AT&T don't want to offer better service or don't want to offer cheaper service for the infrastructure that they already have, and costs should go down as that infrastructure is fulfilled, then I feel like members of a community need to do it themselves. If they don't want to allow other competitors in the space, or other businesses don't think it's profitable to compete in those spaces, then the people should be able to make their own. And every single time we see municipal broadband pop up, well, suddenly prices get way better and service improves. It's funny how when you force competition like that and you don't just settle in on what a market leader is providing because it's the most profitable, but you actually deliver what this technology is capable of, suddenly everything improves. Every service gets better or gets cheaper, and you know, consumers have actual options and actual choice. It only seems to happen in markets where we force another competitor or we force municipal broadband. If you're not in a situation like that, your service stagnates. You have these little incremental improvements and these little nudges and these little bumps, but you pay more and more and more for kind of the same general quality of service. And then what does that get you? It gets you nowhere. So keep an eye on this one. Again, I feel like this lobbying effort is another long fight in the courts. And it's interesting to see that go down in New York. Here in California, at least we got our net neutrality. The net neutrality court battles aren't preventing the application of net neutrality policy. That was the big fight here in California. Like, oh, we're going to debate this in court, but we need a stay. We need to halt the application of this net neutrality law until we debate it out. And our court said, no, we're going to put it into place. You can still have the court case. And if you win the court case, you can just remove the net neutrality provisions. But they're going to be implemented while we fight it out.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Hey there, Juan, and hey there, you. This is Jason Howell from All About Android over at the twit.tv podcast network. Juan has been a guest on All About Android a number of times. In fact, we have awesome guests on the show each and every week, and we'd love for you to check out the show if you haven't already. Twit.tv/AAA is where you can go to find new episodes of All About Android. Each and every week, we talk about the top Android news, hardware, apps. We have a reviews portion called The Arena. It's very competitive, but in a fun way. We have a really great time doing this show, and we would love for you to join us sometime and check it out. We get journalists from throughout the Android world joining us. We even sometimes get Googlers who are actually making Android on the show to talk about what we love so much about the world of Android. That's twit.tv/AAA for new episodes of All About Android each and every Tuesday. All right, Juan, back to you.
Simon says, "Hypno, if Verizon can afford to lose $5 billion buying other companies, they could afford to build a 5G network without the need for government subsidies." I agree. Tech Potato. Also, depreciation of networks are tax deductibles for ISPs as well. Yeah. But again, it's been really frustrating because, like, years ago, we were paying to subsidize the implementation of fiber. Like the big play coming into the early 2000s was like, hey, man, we're going to make fiber to home a thing. And we approved fees tacked onto our bills. We tax breaks, tax subsidies, zoning details. And then all that money just ended up padding profits. And it never made it to the last mile. They were able to sort of cheat around fiber to home by saying they had a fiber network, but the last mile went to a node and then copper would make it into your home. And I'm kind of tired of playing the, well, I mean, the business, and we need to make sure the business, we don't want to rock the boat too hard. I mean, I feel we've given them opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to do business the way that they said they would. And now we need some better accountability. So, I feel municipal broadband would be the best accountability in competition to watch them scurry and improve their service. As an adjunct to that, the FCC just recently, I don't have a link for this. I'll add a link to the show notes. The FCC just recently revamped their speed testing app. So I know whenever I'm showing speed testing on my reviews, I'm usually using the Ookla speedtest.net. I think I might switch that over to the FCC app. So again, you might be paying for broadband or you might be paying for certain kinds of speeds. If you're not getting those speeds, this is the kind of data that the FCC needs to see if these infrastructure spending improvements are actually having an impact. Boots on the ground. I feel it's worth giving the FCC that kind of data, and then that's going to help improve their census, their broadband census of what companies and what carriers and what ISPs are actually living up to their obligations when we're giving them billions of dollars to supposedly improve this stuff. So I recommend checking it out. You know, it's worth running a speed test or two on your own networks just to see, make sure you're getting what you pay for. And then if you do, if you're one of those individuals who does run into a problem, like, hey, I'm paying for 25 down and you can't even give me 10, that's exactly the kind of data that should be sent off to the FCC. And oftentimes, you know, complaining to your carrier doesn't do anything, but complaining to a regulatory agency of the federal government might at least get you an email reply. Oh, and 2Turbo, the Cloudflare. So 2Turbo says the Cloudflare speed test has been pretty sweet as well. I haven't tried the FCC one. The Cloudflare speed test is good. If you just want download speed, I also recommend using is it fast.net or fast.com? The Netflix speed testing app. That's more consuming speed, though. And I like to see also what my upload speeds are. But Cloudflare is good. Ookla's is good. And then I also like to kind of test internally, like off of my own network and router hardware. Excuse me. Yes, Tech Potato says Netflix is fast.com. Thank you. All right. That wraps us for news. Quick run through the subreddit because I had another really solid week on the 2 weeks in a row where I'm hitting pretty hard here. And again, funnily enough, camera conversations, you know, when I show that I'm putting in some work on camera reviewing, it seems to get at least a somewhat positive response from people that seem that actually care about this stuff. I don't have this queued up here. If you check out the top results of the week on reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, you'll see my laughing face right at the top. Camera aperture explained, take better photos from your phone, from me, a number one with a bullet. I was really proud of how this video came out because it was me just walking around talking to my phone like an idiot out on one of my favorite hiking trails. And there were a lot of people out, so I had to keep shooting in these short little bursts. Like, I just think it's rude if you're shooting video of other people while they're just trying to, you know, jog on a trail or something like that. If you want to know what's going on with your smartphone aperture, I've got the video for you. And this helps explain why we see differences in camera performance, even though all these cameras have the same aperture. Why are some cameras better in low light? Well, there's an answer. And techies are usually terrible at telling you what that answer is. Number two, the companion piece to this is my OnePlus 9 analysis from last week's podcast. I did it as a separate little cut up of a video. So you have to sit through a 2.5 hour podcast to get kind of it's still like a 20 minute video. That's the number two spot. And then rounding out the top three, we've got Team Vry playing Resident Evil Village on a phone. Just showing his stream Resident Evil Village, I believe on a Pixel 4a 5G. Someone correct me if I'm wrong there. Additionally, we've got ERP checking out the Sony Xperia 1 Mark III, a true hands-on. I believe this video's in Russian. We've got the Friday checkout talking about Huawei's collapse as we're seeing Huawei quickly run out of smartphone bits and pieces and components. Saturday morning with a side of tech, TK Bay, my brother in arms, doing an episode on what makes a smartphone good or bad. Let's discuss Redmi Note 10 coverage from Audububa, LG Wing Fire Sale from Easy Computer Solutions, Soundcore Life Q30 review, a look at the Samsung Galaxy Unpacked laptop event from Tech PhD, and Tech Odyssey, Adam, checking out the OnePlus 9 Pro full review after using it every day for 2 weeks. He beat me to the punch because I'm kind of looking at a longer term review video for... I missed it. Hold on. Right after that, we've got Tech Potato. And Dr. Ian is in the chat right now. So I believe that rounds us out for the top 10. The true cost of processor manufacturing, TSMC 7 nanometers, Tech Potato. Good commentary there. I've actually kind of been going back and re-binging all of Ian's videos because I like that more casual vibe that he's putting out there. It's good stuff. So reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. This is a beautiful community. We're up another, I think, 5 subscribers week over week. Again, 1753. So we're now officially rounding up to 1,800 members. but again, it's not so much like I feel good that my videos make it to the top. It's more every single time I come here, I'm finding someone that I hadn't seen before. And I feel like that kind of growth, that kind of embracing of newer content creators, established content creators, and broadening out a tech conversation in a more organic way than just who has the biggest channel and we're all going to echo chamber that handful of YouTube channels. What I'd like to put out there, and if you'll pardon the plea, I mean, every week I say, hey, we need more upvotes, we need comments, please share. You know, again, if you share this content, it helps a content creator out tremendously. All of that is still true, and please continue doing all of that. If you're looking to populate some other social media or other subreddits with good content, this is becoming a great resource for finding and for discovering and supporting content creators. But what I'd like to put out there as a challenge for the next week, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Predominantly, we see a lot of videos. That's the main content that's shared on the subreddit. I would like to ask to see if we can find more written content. Are there blogs? Are there editors? Are there reporters? And again, maybe it's content that's coming from a local news channel. Maybe it's content that's coming from someone's personal like Tumblr page or something like that. I'm gonna put this request out there for this community at large. Can you find me some articles that would also be good content to share on reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles? And I'm going to join this challenge too. I mean, not sharing my own stuff. I mean, trying to find other stuff to share. Yes. So once more for the plug, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Continue helping and supporting and sharing and upvoting. But this week, we're going to try and find articles from people that we feel deserve more attention, that could use a little nudge and that could use a little more support. So that's going to do it for the subreddit. I've got one gadget story. And then I just want to hear in the chat, do we want to do the contest wrap up before talking about the Black Shark 4? Or do we want to talk about the Black Shark 4 and then wrap up the contest? We did a giveaway with Rode microphones for my very first smartphone challenge. They're giving away one of these cute little video mics. I picked a winner this morning and I'm very excited about that. But what do we want to do? Gaming phone conversation or contest winner? Go. I'm going to take a drink of water here real quick. Beethoven is saying competition winner. McCorkran is saying gaming phone. Simon says hypno giveaway, gaming phone. Wait, hi, gaming. Gaming phone. So right now it's 4-2 for the gaming phone. Is that what I see? Or we're going to... Aditya is not being particularly helpful. Loki Ted is saying gaming phone. Okay. We'll cover the Black Shark first, and then we'll wrap up the podcast with the winner of my my phone challenge, as brought to you by Rode Microphones, where I love the team at Rode Microphones, and I'm really stoked that they hooked me up with a little mic to give away, especially because from reviewing this mic as part of the vlogger kit, it was better than I was expecting it to be, especially when you can throw like a little windsock, a little dead cat on it. So before we get to the Black Shark, I had this one sort of leak. I don't cover a lot of leaks. Last Thursday, TK and I tried to cover the Samsung Unpacked event, looking at all the Galaxy books. And it's kind of hilariously one of our most disjointed and least focused podcasts. Because every time we tried to talk about, every time we tried to talk about the new laptops, we'd get sidetracked and talk about something we were more excited about. We tried so many times to steer the conversation back to the new Galaxy books, and every single time we'd kind of like go off on some other tangent. So I was really like, I don't want to bring them up on this podcast. Like, it's not really something I'm that passionate about, and I'm like, I'm trying to find some hook. I kind of feel like there's something in the air if the Unpacked event didn't hit the numbers that Samsung was hoping for, because shortly after, we got a bunch of leaks on Z Flip 3 and Z Fold 3. So the new folding phones from Samsung are now getting leaked, and that's getting the buzz and the attention, and now we're seeing all the articles and the Samsung SEO, and it's blowing up the Samsung advertising. Root Knight 5, it's funny because the Galaxy Book is actually an interesting product from Samsung for once. It is. It's just like every single time we would start talking about something on that laptop, we'd run into a wall. Like, for example, is like we were actually looking at the pre-order pricing, and we're like, okay, cool. Like, there's an 8 gigabyte RAM model and a 16 gigabyte RAM model, and there's an option for 256 gigs of storage and 512 and 1 terabyte. And then like you couldn't really mix and match those. So I was like, why on a laptop are you making me, like, if I just wanted more RAM, you're making me buy more storage. If I just needed more storage, but I didn't need more RAM, you're making me buy more machine than I need to. And it's such just like an Apple kind of lock-in business tactic. But even MacBooks often have a little bit more flexibility on how options are. So we just kept running into those kinds of issues, and it was just not fun. I just didn't enjoy it. And yes, Tech Potato is saying it's because it's all about SKU management. But at the same time, it's if you're going to tell me that these are like premium priced home computing devices, even Surfaces have gotten a little bit more repairable and a little bit more upgradable. And I want to see that from other manufacturers too. You know, like, I want to see that from a Samsung also. I want these machines to be less disposable. It makes me really nervous that we're already seeing the next generation Apple Silicon coming out soon, because it's going to turn these into like yearly update kinds of products for some consumers, which is just silly. You know, a laptop shouldn't be something that you feel this burning marketing desire to flip every year. So anyway, again, rambling, tangent, diatribe. The images for the Z Flip 3 and Z Fold 3 look like Samsung folding phones. These are, I found this through a Reddit post, and they have these images of the Z Flip 3, but they have this little GIF of a video for the Z Flip. Here it is. And again, for all those people who complained about the two-tone aesthetic on the Pixel, how much you want to bet they're all going to love it on the Z Flip, because it looks very much like a Pixel. Now, this is a practical little screen window, so that's kind of nifty. But yeah, I mean, it's a two-tone look for a folding phone, a compact folding phone. So I think it looks fine, but that doesn't look like a Samsung to me. That looks like a Pixel. So, yeah, that's what the Z Flip is going to look like. Oh, I can go back here. Let me kill this. I think the images might be a little clearer for us to look at here. Sort of flat circular camera modules, which on a phone this size, I would imagine that we're probably looking at 12 megapixel sensors for both of these, probably the slightly larger, like what we see in the Galaxy S21. Those sensors are probably going to be in the Z Flip. Still, I mean, the main design and build of this still means it's going to be a lump in your pocket, which is ultimately about twice as thick as a premium thin phone, but then can expand to be a proper, you know, a proper smartphone form factor. I do like that this display is getting a bit more functional, though. I really like the idea of a smart pocket watch, right? That's kind of what the Z Flip sort of represents. You take it out of your pocket and you've got this little ticker window that can give you a very brief snippet of information, and then you can decide whether or not you want to open up your phone to interact with it. Something like that makes some sense in my brain because I love smartwatches. I loved having a heads-up display on my Focals. I like anything that abbreviates the interaction that I have, which determines whether or not I'm really going to interact with my phone. So many of my alerts and notifications are things I do not need to act on when I get them. So I can just let them sit or I can ignore them. And I didn't have to really pull out my phone, unlock it, and interact. So stuff like that I think is kind of cool. Like, I really do like what a smaller Z Flip kind of device might be able to deliver there. But then here, let me go back into screen share and we can also check out a few of the clips, the images that they've got for the Z Fold. Now, these are all leaks. This might not be real, but they're showing us a foldable with no hole punch. So there's no hole in the screen for a selfie camera on the tablet folding screen. And they're showing a stylus. And that makes me super anxious. I will be very curious to see if Samsung has really done anything to improve the durability of a plastic display so that you can use a proper fine point S Pen on that display. But when we look at this, that doesn't look like something that could fit inside the phone. This looks like the Surface Pen. You know, it's flatter, it's broader. So it's probably the same S Pen kind of hardware that you would use with a Galaxy S21 Ultra. So it's not going to be the true note replacement where there's a stylus silo that the pen can live in, if we're believing these leaked images, if we're believing these rumors. So I'm not convinced. Like when I was using V60 and dual display, when you know, you pull out a fine point active pen, you know, this isn't hard, but it's not soft. And I would totally believe that if I tried to write on a Z Fold 2 using a pen like this, that screen, the fine point pressure hitting a plastic display, not great. I don't think that's a good combo. So I'll be anxious to see, like, have they solved this? Is there a different material science? Like, maybe there's a true glass panel and there's just like a plastic seam that kind of folds the phone flat. I mean, if you're going to see a seam in the display anyway, maybe they can blend the materials back and forth so that there's only the flexibility on the hinge part and then it's proper glass on the others. If they do something like that, I'd be a lot more excited. Because then I think, you know, using the tablet-y functions of a Z Fold make a lot more sense. Their current solution of micro-thin bending glass is a really expensive way to not make a better display, or at least not make a more durable display. But then we get to the back, and it looks like for your very expensive folding tablet, we're going to be going with mid-ranger cameras too. So this little camera strip that we see on the back of these leaked images, if this turns out to be true, something tells me that this is going to be the hardware we see on an S21 and not the what we would have on an Ultra. So I don't know, I mean, like, how people feel about that. Apparently, if you don't put optical image stabilization on a OnePlus 9, which sells for $730 full MSRP, but you can often find for free on contract or BOGOs. You know, it's a $300 phone if you really shop it. That's a bridge too far. But on a $2,000 folding tablet, I'm sure a lot of Samsung stands are going to come out of the woodwork to say, well, I mean, it's a folding phone. You didn't want the price to be even higher. You've got to pay for the features that you get. And that's, you know, why Samsung did this right, because what I'm buying on a fold is a tablet. And, you know, it's okay if the cameras aren't as good as an Ultra. McCorkran 3 is saying, yeah, brand new V60 was $392. You imagine a V60 for $400? I mean, come on. That phone is such a tank. Oh, it's such a tank. Yeah, Simon says, Hypno, if I had disposable cash, I'd be getting a few LGs myself. I want to find a T-Mobile Wing. And I don't know that I want to shop it used, because the used hinge makes me nervous. But my Wing is a Verizon model, and it's frustrating because I would use it on Visible. I want to activate that phone for Visible, but Visible won't activate these other phones. It's like you get 3 Samsungs or 2 iPhones, and that's all you're allowed to activate for Visible. Yeah, it's a bummer. And McCorkran 3, the T-Mobile Wing was only $599 the last time I checked. I'll have to look into that again, because I felt like that was like on a service, and I just want to put in a Google Fi SIM. So I need the T-Mobile version. I need to look it up, but I'm very tempted. I've been using the Wing for a lot of my outdoor B-roll, and I just really dig the way it works on the go. It's a miserable phone to use when you put your phone down a lot. And that's where a V60 is awesome, or a Duo, you know, dual display folding phones. They're amazing as little pocket computers that then you set down and you use like little computers. The Wing has been incredible for run and gun use, a full horizontal or landscape display and a little portrait keyboard that works just like your phone in portrait orientation works in my brain. So, Simon says, Hypno saying 25 a month for 24 months, zero down plus tax, or full price $599. Okay. I shouldn't, but I might need to look into that. Yes. So a bunch of leaks out. I feel like these are a bit more legit. The way that these look like marketing images from Samsung, the way that they're kind of purposely degraded to kind of hide any information or identifying information. I'm feeling like this could be real material from Samsung, and it makes me both excited and anxious about what Samsung might do for these statement devices, because they're gonna be expensive. I'll be very surprised if Samsung pulls an S21 with the Z Fold. Oh, we found a bunch of ways to cut corners and make the price even cheaper. I feel like they're going to set that cap at around $2,000. And at around $2,000, I don't know that you're getting $2,000 worth of phone. I just don't. From using dual displays, and again, like a V60 fights very aggressively at half the price, full MSRP, from its launch price last year. I feel like that's probably a more competitive option there. And Root Knight, this is absolutely sorry, Dave Burns has a funny comment. We cut so many corners, the phone doesn't even fold anymore. And again, you know, it's a Galaxy Tab, right? It's a Tab Z series. Root Knight 5, though, even from Samsung, you can get an S21 and a book for the price of a fold. So you really need a foldable to buy one. I just like dual display makes so much more sense in my head. Like the practical application of two discrete displays that kind of clamshell, that kind of fold on top of each other. And especially like on a V60 or a Velvet where it's removable. Again, it's just so much clearer. The use cases, the compromises, everything makes more sense in my head. But when you break it down like that, you could buy a nice phone and a nice laptop and be at around the same price as a Z Fold 3. It's just so hard to figure out who's going to be the right fit for that. Like V60 was cheaper than V50. It was easy. That was easy to recommend. Z Fold 2 to Z Fold 3. And again, to not know that they've really fixed the issues with stylus support. If you're going to poke at that screen with a pen, I don't know. Anyway, I'll have the links there. You can catch those images yourself. But I feel like this one is pretty close. Like, I think this is what we're going to get when we see the Z Fold 3 in person. And now I need to figure out if I'm even going to try to pre-order one of these, because I'm not feeling like I'll be able to review it fairly. I feel like it's just going to be a lot of emotional wand baggage when these phones actually come out. And especially if it's like, you know, Snapdragon 888 running screaming hot on a foldable tablet that doesn't perform better for a lot of your productivity apps than an 865 is going to make me real cranky pants. The Bagnell baggage from Dave Burns. And Root Knight, the price does. The price gives me a lot of emotional baggage. Yeah, it's great. So I want to break into Xiaomi, Black Shark. I've got the Black Shark 4. This is not the 4 Pro. This is the regular 4, being called a budget gaming phone. And we're rocking a Snapdragon 870. So we're in great territory for horsepower. And again, we were just talking about how much, you know, other phones have had kind of an emotional impact. And I just think it's kind of cute. There's like this glass patterning. So you move it back and forth and there's this like X pattern on the back of the phone. But if you were to just soften the edges around the camera module, this is very similar to a V60. So if they were making a phone that aesthetically, I would think was pretty neat. They got really close to a phone that I very much enjoyed for being a slab, a mini pocket tablet of a phone. So this is 12 gigs of RAM, 4,500 milliamp hour battery. And I've just wrapped up my main performance testing. So I'm going to try and have a video out on this for Wednesday, an actual review video. But tomorrow I'm going to do my buy the benchmarks. So you can at least see all the numbers, the stats, the video editing, file compression, photo editing. But if you're watching this or listening to this now as a teaser, performance is mostly in line with where we were last year. And I feel that that's significant overkill for most of your high-level smartphone needs. I still feel like the sweet spot between the Snapdragon 855 and the 865 is still ridiculously powerful pocket hardware. And this 870 is kind of keeping us in line with that same kind of power curve, that same kind of horsepower need. So considering that this is the budget version, we're in really good territory. A lot of what really gets changed up here, first of all, the fingerprint sensor is on this power button. And I don't know what Xiaomi's doing, but their fingerprint sensors are kind of fantastic. The responsiveness, the scanning, the position, everything kind of lines up in a beautiful way for how you would pull a phone out of your pocket and want to go right into using it. And this was the same case with the Mi 11 Lite. And I like what they're doing here too. I would much prefer keeping with this because I think it's more practical, more functional, and easier to hit than some kind of featureless in-display fingerprint sensor. I mean, it just has been working so much more consistently. I mean, without really planning it, I've just been turning it on and off this entire time I've been talking about it, and it hasn't missed a single scan while I'm not paying attention to it and I'm talking to the camera. So very, very impressive there. There is a headphone jack. I just finished doing the audio testing on the headphone jack, and I am going to be giving this kind of its own little audio deep dive. And it's very similar to a number of the other phones that we've tested recently, where there is a headphone jack. There is a label on the box saying high-res audio. This wouldn't be one of my top picks for audio files. So we'll have more to say on that. But decent speakers. The speaker performance has been pretty good. And where we were against, because I didn't really get to review last year's Black Shark, but I got to play with it. I like some of the little tweaks and some of the improvements to the haptics. So this is not a super powerful haptic motor, but I like that the way they control the haptic motor is a lot more nuanced. So the little buzzes as you type are very precise and very plucky. So there's a distinct pop, as opposed to just like a more powerful motor that just kind of fuzzes under your fingertips. So I'm really happy with that. Using this for what it actually is designed for, though, I love having specific hardware that has like kind of an active component to it. So like the hinges on a Duo, you really want to open and close a Duo. The swivel hinge on the Wing, we were just talking about the Wing. You can't help but flick that screen open and closed. I mean, like, I am terrible. I always have little knick-knacky things on my desk. I don't use a fidget spinner, but I'm constantly playing with things. And on the Black Shark, it's the magnetic triggers. So the Black Shark 4 has these two switches on the side here. And when you flick them, you get these little shoulder triggers that pop up. And then you flick the switch again and it pops away and the side of the phone is totally smooth. Let me see if I can get that right on the mic for some ASMR action here. I could do this all day. Not even really using them. I could just keep flicking the switch on and off. It's hilarious. This is so much fun. It's really stupid fun.
Hey, podcast listeners, I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to somegadgetguy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
So when the phone is just regularly being used as a phone, you can map shortcuts, like if you want to use it to take a screenshot, or you can use them as buttons to kind of like scroll through apps. I don't like moving from the top to the bottom to use them as scrolling apps, but as scrolling triggers. But you can do that if you want. It's cool. I've started firing up more games, and I'm trying to be a little diplomatic here. This hardware is insanely powerful for the tier that they're kind of positioning this at for phones released this year. It's a direct competitor against phones that were released last year. So again, if you got this, there are a few things that are a little faster than a phone with an 865, and there are some things that are slower than a phone with an 865. We're in kind of a transition or a holding pattern where the 800 series Snapdragon isn't just one thing. Now there are two tiers. So there's like a, this is a high tier powerful device. And then the 888 is a more powerful tier of device. Gaming is such a broad topic to try and lock down in a very simple or straightforward way. So like I can show you a Geekbench score, and the GPU scores from Geekbench are great. Like perfectly competitive, outpacing a lot of the Snapdragon 865s. But we know that that's not real life. We know that the Geekbench GPU score doesn't really predict how different games are going to behave. So when I see triggers, one of the first things that I want to play with are some of my more demanding twin stick shooters. So if you catch a game like Tesla versus Lovecraft, it's this really cute, you know, like top down bullet hell shooter, right? You're running around this map and you're destroying all of these evil demons from another dimension, Lovecraftian style. And you get all of these power-ups and perks, and you can build a little mech, Victorian mech suit, so that you can kill them more effectively. So the main controls are left thumb moves you around, and right thumb aims your main weapon. But it's a pain on a touchscreen because there are all these additional, like you can teleport, you can switch weapons, you can use these power-ups as individual, like you can get like a bomb and it kind of like wipes out a small number of enemies on the map. But if you have to take your thumb off of one of those main controls, it leaves you vulnerable. So you might be moving around and like, oh, I'm about to get killed by this guy here. I need to teleport. But if I teleport, that means I have to stop aiming my weapon. Well, when we can add hardware, like a proper game controller or programmable triggers, that makes the gameplay so much easier. And especially because this is just like the dual display game controller on V60. You map where it touches on the screen, and that's all the trigger needs to do. So the game doesn't have to have proper controller support. I get it all set up. I'm jumping in. Tesla versus Lovecraft. This is the first game I'm going to play. And the frame rate is garbage. You get more than 20 enemies on a screen and it becomes a slideshow. And this is after there was a sort of a day one patch, a software update for the Black Shark 4. And I'm just crestfallen. Like, no, this is the main game I want to play to show off this kind of hardware. Tesla versus Lovecraft is not an easy game for a phone to play, but since the 855, we've had good frame rates and not anything quite so sensitive. So there's an optimization thing that needs to happen. Black Shark 4 kind of let me down there. Other games have been playing better. I'm going to go into that with more detail. Again, some of my favorite titles, Dead Cells. I've been playing Pascal's Wager. There are other things that we can showcase. And this is still a beastly powerful phone. It just, my heart sank. Just like, oh, this kills my soul just a little bit. This is like the perfect game to showcase, like where programmable triggers on the side of a phone can turn this into a Switch style experience. And the first game I play is a port from the Nintendo Switch that does not run well. From Dave Burns, do you think it's game optimization or a hardware problem? Do you think it's sustained heat issues? No, I really don't think it's completely the fault of the phone. As we've been changing through, like 870, from 865 to 870 to 888, I feel like app developers need to get on board. For example, the 870 lists as a three-tier CPU. So if you look at an 865, it's more little core quad core and big core quad core. Well, there is one listed performance core on the 870. You know, it's little differences like that in how an app really leverages the hardware. Enough changes, even from an 865 to an 870. It's not one to one. It's not just a straight comparison. And it's those little changes too, like when an app developer can take advantage of better GPU drivers, better Vulkan drivers, better APIs, then the app should perform better and the phone shouldn't have to work as hard. And I feel like that's kind of one of the things that we're running into, where you take a game that was originally published for the Switch and you port it to Android. For the most part, it's going to play well, because Android phones are ridiculously powerful. Even mid-ranger phones are silly powerful devices. But comparative, generational performance improvements still need to be realized by having the phone manufacturer make sure that everything is accessible and that the app developers are updating their software to take advantage of these new platforms and new capabilities. So I think it's a little, of both. Six of one, half a dozen of another. And I just managed to find yet another game that I enjoy playing that probably isn't high profile or getting a lot of attention in the Android ecosystem. Like, I don't really play Genshin, and I don't want to. And I don't want to have to use that as a benchmark, because then it's work. But if, like, I can show you, like, Dead Cells or Pascal's Wager, that's a game I really like to play. So then it's more fun for me to show that off. The charging has been ridiculous. It's a 120-watt charger, which charged the phone from 8% to 95% in under 15 minutes. And the phone was warm. Maybe the warmest I've felt from a phone charging in a while, but that was an insane charging rate. So that's crazy. That's fast. You could heat some leftovers up on it. You probably could have. You use it as like a little warm plate. You know, you could plug it in, charge it, and then, you know, heat up your coffee if your coffee's sitting on your desk. And there was one other thing I was going to mention. Oh, and I was going to try and show, like, I was getting set up this morning to do the podcast, and I can't get any video output from the Black Shark 4. So that's going to be kind of a bummer. One of the things that's kind of cool about gaming phones is a lot of them have some kind of video output capabilities. So you can plug them into a TV and play games like it's a portable console or like a Switch. I need to play around more and just make sure I'm not missing some kind of setting. But if the Black Shark 4 with a Snapdragon 870 is not fully supporting USB 3 for video output and for other accessories, that's going to be kind of a bummer. I that actually will suck some of the fun out of this phone, because I've actually done that. You know, the very first time I showed my brother Tesla versus Lovecraft, we were playing it on my parents' 70-inch HD TV, UHD TV, plugged into, what was it at the time? Oh, it was plugged into my LG G8X. I popped the G8X out of the dual display, plugged in my HDMI cable, plugged it into a TV, and I had my little SteelSeries Bluetooth controller, and that's the first time he played Tesla versus Lovecraft, and then he went out and bought it for his Switch. That kind of stuff is really fun. I want to be able to do that. I feel like if we're going to take gaming phones seriously, and there's this huge argument to be made, because, I mean, look at the price of a Nintendo Switch, and then consider the price of a good mid-ranger phone, like in that $300 to $400 territory. You might be better off, depending on what you play, you might be better off buying a nice gaming phone, right? There is now becoming, I think, a decent argument to say the main things I do on my phone are kind of social media-y things, and I like to play these types of games on my Nintendo Switch. So instead, I could maybe save $100 and go with a phone that covers both of those bases. Again, it's like we're getting a lot closer there. There's a better screen. There's huge battery life. The phone can do more things and take care of more things for you than a Nintendo Switch can. We need more game developers to take Android seriously, but we're right on top of it. So if there's no video output here, it quells one of the things that I think is kind of fun to do with a gaming phone, to really show off what a gaming phone can do well. Rue Sunshine is saying Xiaomi hasn't done USB 3 video output in any phones that I can recall. That's a bummer. That's kind of a bummer. F. Mooney, will we see a return from the Razer phone reviewer? You're like, what even is a gaming phone, guys? Am I right? Nah, I'm probably not going to bring out Gadget Boy I don't even remember what I'm calling that him anymore. I know for the Yam video, it was just Gadget Guy. Hey, it's your boy. It's Gadget Guy. I'm super chill. I'm doing this thing, and I'm so over tech, but let me make a tech video. No, I don't think I'm going to trot him back out again. Oh, and Gary, no one's disrespecting the Razer phone. Actually, that was all in love. Razer phone 2. Actually, you know, again, it's funny. Like, Razer phone 2 in some of these more demanding games can still kind of keep up with a Galaxy S21. So if you really play, it might be worth knowing just how these phones perform under different games. And that's kind of what I'm running into with the Black Shark, is one game I've played so far, not doing so great. So, like I said, video out probably Wednesday by the benchmarks, coming out tomorrow. And it just, I mean, again, it's joining a part of this conversation where it's even more frustrating how techies just regurgitate specs. Because you're going to get all this, oh, well, it's the budget option. Oh, it's the 870. 865 is already kind of an older chipset. And so few folks in these types of conversations can describe use that really maxes out a Snapdragon 845. Well, I play this game. Okay, that game plays great on an 845. Well, I was thinking maybe I want to shoot and edit a little more video. Snapdragon 845 still render video phenomenally well. Not as fast as an 865, but still pretty quick. Snapdragon 845 still outperform a lot of the 765 phones out there in the mid-range. 2 years, we still haven't fully beaten the 845. So much of our performance idea of what a phone should deliver, Snapdragon 845 is still getting it done. And then it gets nicer when you step up to an 855, and then you're in gross overkill for a lot of these services on an 865. So that's kind of getting the hairs, like, it's putting my back up. I wish we talked about phones more like we talked about laptops, desktops, CPUs, GPUs, components, game consoles. We're really trying to test these performance claims and metrics. Because, again, I feel like unless you were expecting to do more with your phone, folks have been grossly overbuying for a couple years now. Dave Burns, Cookie Clicker only runs at 115 frames per second on an SD 845. It's basically unusable. And Fat Produce, you know, Andrew, even the Snapdragon 835 performs well to this day. Absolutely. Again, I'm preaching to the choir here. I know you folks here in the chat are kind of feeling me on this. But again, it's this like specs for specs sake that just kills me. Because it's like, you're not doing this right. You're not getting anything better. You're spending more to keep in the same pocket. And if you were telling me like, hey, I really want to try and do this with a phone, that would help. Because then I could say, oh yeah, an 865 is going to crush that. Or maybe you do want to try an 888 if you can keep it cool. You know, like, that would help. But instead, it's still like, oh, it just needs to just work. And average consumers. And that's nonsense. So I want to wrap this up on a happy note. A major part of my conversation is I want to encourage people to do more with their phones. And so I kicked off a video. It's a series that I hope to pass to other channels. I'm going to challenge other YouTube channels to put up phone challenges. So I need everyone to, in love and with respect, I need everyone to go hit up Technically Speaking, Scott Peachy, because I'm working him next. I want to see what Scott can come up with to challenge his viewers to do something different on a phone. So my first challenge was record a podcast. You've got this amazing magic pocket computer with these high quality telecommunications microphones built into it. The mics on your phone, even if you have a, you know, sort of a low priced mid-ranger phone, the mics are built for tackling phone calls. They're gonna be better than the mics that you can get on decent laptops. This is this amazing resource, this incredible tool to tell a story, to capture a memory. Even if it's not something like you've got designs on being the next Joe Rogan Experience, your own family memories can be captured. I have an audio recording of my daughter singing Uptown Funk. She was like 3 years old. And we're in the car. We had just gotten a Blake's Lotta Burger. We were in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And for whatever reason, I tapped on the HD audio recorder on my LG instead of shooting video. But I've got this wonderful audio recording of her singing along to Uptown Funk. It's amazing. It's incredible. And we're in the car because the car is already a little soundproofed, right? You know, probably the most soundproofed thing you own might be a car instead of trying to like set up recording space in your office. So that was my challenge. Use your phone to record a podcast talking about the last year of your life. You know, years from now, we're going to have a hard time remembering what quarantine was like just from the day-to-day monotony of shelter in place. And it's critical that we kind of do something to back up these memories. People are going to ask us about this kind of stuff years from now. And in my household, we've got tons of little videos and photos and some of these audio recordings and my podcasts talking about this stuff. We can look back on this and get a pretty good idea of what we were doing for most things. So I put the challenge out there. And the folks at Rode Microphones really liked this idea. So they hooked up a little USB video mic to give away. Well, the contest ended last night. The challenge continues. I still would love to hear the podcasts and the interviews that you record, but we've got to pick a winner. And through the random number generator on my gleam.io link, not only did it pick a winner, it did pick someone who shared a link to a podcast. So, drum roll, please. The winner of the Rode Microphones giveaway, he will be receiving a USB video mic, Video Mic Me C from Rode Microphones to use with his phone, is none other, I don't even know if he's still in the live chat, but it's Saeed Ted, Loki Ted, who produced a podcast interview with himself and Crystal, who I believe is someone of a romantic relationship with. I'm not sure if Ted's married. I don't know. But Loki Ted in the live chat, Saeed Ted on Twitter, one of the guys who's been most vocal in sharing like links from Glowing Rectangles. Like he was doing daily recaps for a while of the top stories on Glowing Rectangles. So he's got a Rode Video Mic Me C coming his way. And he shared just an absolutely wonderful conversation between himself and Crystal, just talking about what some of the highs and lows of the last year were. It's like 12 minutes of audio. And it really is just kind of a wonderful conversation. Just a wonderful insight into two human beings who had some rough challenges over the last year and found some really joyful moments over the last year. And I got to say, I mean, for those of you who not only shared, but participated, tried to record something. I mean, I've been listening through all the different recordings that people have sent my way. Some of them are just cloud storage links. Some of them are posted publicly. Like this is anchor.fm. That Ted shared his podcast on, captured on an iPhone 11 with the Shure microphone. Oh, we got some competition. So you'll have a Shure microphone to use on your iPhone 11. You'll have a Rode microphone to use on your USB-C. But Anchor, I mean, just a phenomenal resource. And like you can catch it on Spotify. So Reflections by Ted. Ted and Crystal go over the prior year, discuss the highs and lows, and see how they can learn and go forward. You can listen to it on Spotify. It looks like it's also available on anything else that can catch a podcast. I just really want to say thank you. I've been listening to as many of these as I've been able to fit into the background of my day. And it's not about production quality. And it's really not about like trying to make this as well polished as like an NPR news broadcast or like a Serial or some other type of high profile kind of podcast. It's about understanding that you've got something that can help you tell a story. It's understanding that you've got something that can help you preserve a memory. And it's not about production quality. I really feel like a lot of us, because we hear so many examples of this stuff done well, we get in our own way. We let perfect be the enemy of complete. You never finish something because you keep thinking like, well, I need to edit this and I need to spruce that up. And I've got to get bumpers and maybe I should get some music and put some music under it. Or how do I edit this so that I can take out some of like these mouth click noises and stuff. And you never, you're sort of comparing yourself to a team of people who produce that kind of audio content. You know, like the fully produced podcast that you listen to probably had 3 or 4 people working on it at least. And if you just do it yourself, it's okay. You can still tell that story. It doesn't need to be the same production level. You'll never finish it if you feel like that's what you always have to compete against. And you miss out. You won't tell that story. You'll forget that story. It won't be there anymore. 5 years from now, what are you going to remember of a year in quarantine? What are you going to remember? What have you already forgotten over this last year? So this one really meant a lot to me. I was excited to put it together. I was excited to share this challenge, even though, you know, I know these types of videos or these types of blog posts, these types of things don't get the same kind of like traffic as like a really divisive, you know, smartphone comparison. But I feel like this is the direction I need to go for my own mental health. You know, like just listening to what people made me way more excited about what we might be able to do for future challenges and for future phone reviews and just for future topics, things to talk about. So it really meant a lot. So this is where I need everyone else. Technically speaking, Scott, Peachy, I'm putting the challenge out there. I am challenging you to challenge your viewers to do something different with their phones. It could be anything. Just beyond opening up Reddit or scrolling through Twitter or taking one casual snapshot from a phone with an HDR auto mode camera, what else can you encourage someone to do with their phones and help them get more bang for their gadget buck? So everyone here, if you're listening to this, please politely go send them like a little tweet, go hook them up, say, hey, Scott, I can't wait to see what challenge you come up with for your channel. And then all of us, we really all have to work together to help promote whatever Scott does on his channel next. One, he's just deserving of a little more traffic and a little more attention anyway. But two, just we want to have fun. Let's make this like a fun rolling challenge. And then we'll see who he decides to pass the challenge on to next. So it's just some really fun ideas. I really want to find a way to execute them well. And I really hope that this is something that we can all jump on board. Because, you know, again, every time I show someone something that their phone can do, it's like a light bulb. You know, like it's just like you see that click and then suddenly they're excited about their phones again. The phone isn't just this burden. It's this thing that I have to buy another one every 3 years, transfer all of my contacts, set everything up, new phone, who dis, like showing them like, oh, no. This phone can do this and it can do it really well. It's so much more exciting than just like, oh, well, it's a Samsung and then Apple and then Apple and Samsung and Apple, Samsung, Sam, Apple. Like, it's dull. And Ted, because I think you're still in the chat here, I'll reach out to you. I'm going to hit you up on the Discord. I need to get your shipping information so that I can send it off to Rode and they'll send you your brand new video mic, Misi. Thank you for participating in this contest. Your podcast was phenomenal. I really enjoyed listening to it. And you and Crystal had an amazing rapport. So I hope that maybe this sparks that kind of idea that this is something you could do on the regular, because I thought you were both very good at knocking out this piece of audio. And even for me being super rambly, we're right at 2 hours. So I say, let's go ahead and put a pin in this. Let's go ahead and shut this down. Folks, thank you so much. I am super loopy. Really, this was like a scattered podcast for me. I had a lot of fun. I hope you had, I hope you had a good time too. Some gadget guy, you rambly? No. And Simon says, Hypno, thank you for the banter as well. Folks, I'm getting more and more excited about what we might be able to do. I've had my second vaccination. I'm feeling like I'm better up to speed there. I'm talking to TK. I'm talking to Josh. I'm talking to Trish. I feel like there's so much that we're going to get to catch up on. I feel like there's so much that we're going to get to do that we've had to put on hold. Some major life changes for me and my family. We're going to be moving, schools, summer camps. My daughter's just turning into an incredible photographer all on her own, and she's five. There's so much more that I'd rather be sharing in terms of stories. And knowing that there's a whole community of people out here who are making cool stuff too, it's so much more exciting to be a part of that. And I feel like that's where we need to go. I feel that's where we should be. If we're going to really live up to this idea of lifestyle tech. So I want you to have an amazing week with your technology. I want you to do awesome with your technology. I want you to be awesome with your technology. And I'll catch you back here next week for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. Sharing, reviewing, always greatly appreciated for spreading the word and bringing more people so that we can all get into this stuff together. Go harass Scott respectfully. Go look him up and say you want to see what he does for a phone challenge. And I'll catch you back here next week. Be safe. Take care. New normal is right around the corner and it's coming up fast. And I'll catch you back. I love y'all.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.